This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
It's very hard to even put into words. I feel like I have unlocked my future potential. I unlocked the person I had hoped that I'd be. I navigated that whole thing. I did all the hard work, you know, by having that additional capacity. I'm so incredibly proud of myself. It was hard. It was really hard. But for anybody that's listening, I would just say, lean into the hard. And I would just remind anyone that's listening, when you're sitting there and you think, I can't do this, how could I do this? Maybe it's you. Maybe you already have everything that you need to get to where you want to go. You just have to start dismantling the ego, let go of these self-limiting beliefs because you're holding yourself back. When you come and you make a decision, I am going to do this, I'm going to take one step after another and I'm just going to keep moving forward. Before you know it, you'll start jogging, then you'll start running. But maybe it's you. Maybe you already have everything that you need.
That is this week's guest on Over the Influence. She's called Jen Mugen, lives in Kildare in Dublin, more than 3 years alcohol-free. It's a great chat, so much to talk about. Jen herself describes being on the podcast this week as a bit of a 360 moment. She's been with the podcast, started listening right at the start for us, which is what, coming up for 5 years ago. She had us in her ears on every walk. She's listened to hundreds of hours while doing hundreds of kilometres. And now Jen herself is an actual guest on Over the Influence. And we've got so much to talk about in this episode. We do want to give you a little bit of a heads up. During the course of the episode, Jen makes reference to an attempt of serious sexual assault. If you decide that that's triggering, if this episode isn't for you, we completely understand that. And as always, we thank you for listening.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, I'm Becky, and I was a typical grey area drinker. I'd managed to do several stints of alcohol-free life, but would regularly falter around the three-month mark. This time, I joined the fabulous OTI community, and it was just what I needed. The Zooms were a game changer for me, connecting with people who relate and support you through the struggles, but who also really understand and celebrate the importance and the significance of the mini wins and the milestones. OTI is full of amazing people. I'm just approaching 7 months alcohol-free and I feel absolutely fantastic.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. We say it every week, it's because we mean it. We're just chuffed to bits that you are listening, wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey, adventure, however you want to describe it, roller coaster. It could well be the case, and we know it is, actually, from the amount of guests that we've spoken to over the years, you could well be still drinking, listening to this, just having those thoughts. Sober curious, call it what you will. We're just happy to have you here. Thank you kindly. My name is Sharon Hartley. I am based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. This year, but I don't really count days anymore, I count in years. That's how ridiculous this is. I will be in my 7th year of sobriety. I took a break from booze slap bang in the middle of my 40s. It was just coming up to my 45th birthday. And that was all it was ever going to be. Just a bit of a break to reset and to show myself and indeed the rest of the world that yes, I can be a sensible drinker. Yes, I can rein it in. I don't always have to go at a million miles an hour. What a big, massive crock of poo, because we don't swear on this podcast anymore at all. So I'm just going to use the P word for that. Otherwise, I'll get told off by our producer. I used to drink too much, too quickly and far too often. The best thing I ever did was take that break, because it has now led to me living my best sober life. And it's fab. And I've got to say it in this voice when we talk about sobriety, Ben, living my best sober life. What about you?
Hi, I'm Ben. Yeah, I'm living my best sober life.
You're going to do it in that voice. I'm Ben. Do it in the voice.
I'm living my best sober life. That's it. At 36, I live in Liverpool. I am husband to Jem, dad to baby Leo, stepdad to Alfie and Millie. And I was a binge drinker. I would go out and, you know, say I'll be out for a couple of pints, and then it would be a couple plus a couple plus a couple more plus a couple of shots. I didn't drink every day, but when I did drink, I really went for it. And I never meant to give up alcohol forever. I meant to have a 3 month break, extended that to 6, extended that to 12. And on day 366, looked at the data,
Sharon, in the back end.
And I just. And it was a remarkable difference in the person that I was, the way I felt, the way my relationships were going, work. Like, it was just immeasurably better for me to be an alcohol-free person. I do stuff now. You know, before I'd put on my CV, like, what do you do? Like, outside of work, I've got all this kind of education and experience. And when it comes to activities, it'd be like, I like socialising, which meant drinking. Whereas now, you know what? We'll meet our guest in a sec, promise. But we've accompanied our guest on hundreds of miles of walking, which I think is just fabulous. Because that's one of the things that, you know, for me personally, you know, when I was a kid, I'd go walking all the time. I was in the Scouts and the CCF. And I just didn't do that when I really kicked off my drinking career at uni and then into my 20s. Now, there's nothing I love more than getting out onto a mountainside, chatting some poo with mates. But I wouldn't be doing that if I wasn't alcohol-free. Right, we need to shut up because we've got a fabulous
we
guest.
We do, and we need to get a handle on these intros. We keep saying they're going to be short, they're going to be brief. It's all about the guest.
Stop it. Move on.
We're dead chuffed this week because it's been a long time coming, this episode. It really, really has. And I know it's going to be brilliant and we've got so much to talk about. Our guest on Over the Influence this week is Jen Mugan, who is based in Kildare, which is just outside the beautiful city of Dublin. More than 3 years alcohol-free, although Jen said herself she doesn't really count anymore because she's just living a booze-free life. Jen, welcome to the podcast. How the hell are you?
I'm amazing. I'm so happy to be here. And as I said to you, just as we were having a little bit of a warm up, this marks a pivotal moment for me. This is a full circle moment to be sitting here with you guys at a time when I started out. I didn't think that this was something that would ever happen. And I remember thinking to myself, if I can get to that point that I am sharing my story for the betterment of others, then I've got there. So this is huge. So thank you so much for allowing me to have this experience.
You're very welcome, Jen. I think it's fair to say, I'm not over-egging the pudding here when I say that you are a huge Over the Influence fan, like huge. You've listened to us for for many, many hours. You were telling us in our warm-up.
I'd say every single episode. Yeah. Like your podcast, like no words, but like when I started and when I started considering going alcohol free and I, you know, and then I started wanting to find a podcast and I was looking around because there was nobody around me in my life, in my immediate circle, my friendship circle, anything like that, that was alcohol free. Never had been. It just didn't exist. It just wasn't something, you know, that was around me. And so I'd never seen a play out before. I'd never seen what this life looked like. And when I'd arrived at the point that I wanted to seriously consider, you know, taking a break and feeling what this was going to be like, I needed to find something that I could connect with, some people that I could connect with that made sense and that were relevant to me. And I went through listening to loads of different pods and I looked up loads of different, you know, groups and different things, and there was nothing there. And yours was the first. OTI was the very, very first one that when I landed on it, the crack that the two of you were having, the two of you were buzzers. You're a great crack. You're honest. There was no poo, right? It was straight up and down. And I loved that. I resonated with that. Like, it just made sense to me. And so when I landed upon you, I just thought to myself, these guys I can listen to. You know, I feel like they're authentic. And that really jumped out at me. So then I just literally started on the first episode and I just listened to them. And I'd literally be going on my walks. I'd have the earphones in. I'd be unloading the dishwasher, earphones in, walking around the house, earphones in. And I just listened to everything. I just listened to all of your guests the whole way through. You know?
Is there a dog in the background? Is there a dog? Do you have a dog?
It might be mine.
No.
Yeah,
It might be mine. I want you to stay there. I'm just being nosy. I want to know what sort of dog it is. Yeah.
It's Archie.
And what breed is Archie?
Archie's a cockapoo.
Ah, you see, the cutest. I wasn't sort of sure if it was Ben Sausage or if it was you had a dog as well. It could have been mine.
Dog.
Sausage dog.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I do not. Window. Absolutely not. It is not an issue.
Don't worry about it.
No, I'm just being really nosy. Right. We'll talk about your story in just a sec, but it's really interesting to hear what you're saying about the podcast because, you know, for people listening now, at the start of their journey. Mm. And like I said in the intro, you know, people find us when they're still drinking and that is okay. It's where it all starts. It's where those seeds are planted. But I tell you what, when you start out doing this for the first time in what might be decades, it might be such a long time, holy moly, it can be a lonely, lonely road. And I think you feel like you're the only person on the actual planet doing this. What difference did it make to you? Not just hearing myself and Ben wanging on about, you know, sober living and what it's like, but hearing from our guests, because we have had so many over the last 5 years with so many different stories, various levels of drinking. What was that like for you, hearing other people share what it was being like for them?
Well, I mean, you hit it straight on the head there, like straight away. I didn't feel totally alone. And honestly, it was such a lonely experience. It was at the beginning, like I didn't know where I was going with it. I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know, was I giving it up forever? The idea of that terrified me. I couldn't even, it would freeze me with fear. Like I couldn't envisage a life without it, because I thought my biggest fear was being excluded from society. My biggest fear was that they're going to take the key back to the pub. You're not allowed in. There's no place for people like you. Friends aren't going to want me. I'm going to be left on my own. Like I was rigid with fear. Like that is honestly like where I was at. And when I, every single one of your guests, when I listen to them and your community members so graciously sharing their stories and putting it out there for people like me to find the breadcrumbs and start coming up behind them to realize this is doable. And I listened to people who had had far more difficult roads than I had, and hearing them overcoming it gave me such hope. It just gave me hope, really, that this was something that I could achieve. And like, and then you'd listen to some stories, and I'd always find that every single story I'd come away with something, whether it was a case of having just listened to somebody's experience and having the privilege of that, or whether it was simply, and it is a privilege, because people are sharing things that are kind of, you know, you wouldn't really be going around talking to your friends about. And yet they're coming on, they're sharing them. And others would actually share things that I would come away with, and I'd go, oh, okay. And I'd start piecing these together, and it became part of my arsenal, you know? And I gradually started to build up a little arsenal for myself of little tips and tricks and motivational things. And I just, even though I was on those walks on my own, myself and the dog, but even though I was on that walk on my own, I didn't feel alone, you know? And then when I listened to the two of you doing your intros, you always go, we need to shorten these. Don't shorten them, because actually they always brought a smile to my face. I loved that. It made me feel like I was taking a seat at a table, you know, if that makes sense.
Totally. Oh, it's amazing. Thank you. It's just, it bowls us over to hear about the impact that the podcast can have, you know, in particular. It's the stories of other people. It really is. And normalizing sobriety and letting people know that actually it's okay to take a break, to make this choice. Who knows where it might lead?
Before it's an option. It's actually an option.
Absolutely. It is. And you know what? It's a really good one. But you sort of, you don't know that until you know that, do you? You know, and we can tie ourselves up in knots about it. Jen, take us back to life as a drinker, and why those seeds were sown, and why you were looking for a podcast for connection, for alcohol-free content. What was life like for you then?
Well, life, I suppose, the thing with alcohol, and I'd often say it, it's a bit like, it's like, you know, the background music in a lift. It's just always there. You don't really hear it, but it's always there. And sometimes you pick up a good tune and you're like, oh yeah, that's a good tune. I can kind of hear that. And it plays different parts and different roles in your life. And throughout my life, from very early on, like, you know, growing up in the 80s in Ireland, alcohol is obviously a massive feature. And I was only reading an article there the last day, 1975, when there was actually the most violent riots, you won't believe this, the most violent riots in the state occurred in Dublin in 1975, 50 years ago only, where 345 people were injured in violent clashes with the police because they had, the government had reduced the drinking limit from 22 pints to 12. Right. So that was the world that you're growing, that you're kind of growing up in. You know yourself, no seatbelts, you know, alcohol, like drink driving, totally legal, all of that, right? Smoking in maternity wings, totally acceptable. You know, so it's always in the background. And then I suppose, you know, starting drinking at the age of 15 was kind of an exciting time. You know, you're getting to get in there and you can have the crack. And that was fine. You're learning how to drink and, you know, you're kind of ebbing and flowing through life like that. And at different stages in my life over the years, like, I don't know how much detail you want me to get into here in terms of different things.
As much as you're like, comfortable.
We got time.
Do you have time? Okay, well, I might just take you on a small bit of a journey. Like, as in, so, like, from kind of the age of 15 to about 25 was a very, very difficult time, very difficult period in my life, right? And from, I always say from 25 on, I kind of feel like that's when my adult life really kind of began. Like, my true me kind of started. But again, you know, with stopping and starting. And over that period, there was a number of different things that had occurred, like in terms of the death of somebody very close to me, you know, and like identifying them and stuff like that. And then there was an attempted rape on me in the house, my parents' house. So I managed to just about get away from him. He had broken in while I was in the house and he'd known that I was there or whatever. And I managed to escape and get into the neighbors next door. That was only when I was 19. You know, kind of going, starting into college, like life around that time was a very kind of a lonely place for me. And the world was a bit scary for me, you know, and alcohol was a friend. It was a really good friend because it meant that I could go and I could socialize and I could meet my friends. And when I was in college, I went into first year college. I was very young. I was only 17 starting into college. And I couldn't even orient myself in terms of getting around the place. I really hadn't a clue. And I was so overwhelmed. And like at that time, alcohol was a very big friend for me. I could go down and I could be in students' union bars. There's always people there, you know, and I managed the first 2 years of college and then I dropped out to start working so that I could make money and actually start find a place that I could live on my own, whatever, and house share and that kind of thing. And then you're working in the 90s in Ireland. And to go to the pub at lunchtime, like, totally acceptable behaviour. Like, I look at it now, I was in sales. I started straight in sales. And if you've ever worked in sales, it's work hard, play hard, you know? So, like, working hard, playing hard, pints on your lunch break. No one would bat an eyelid. You know, ashtrays on the table, everyone's smoking in the office and smoking in the lift. That was kind of where you're at, you know? The big old, like, clippy phones, like, big bricks, like, big mobile phones were back at that kind of time, you know? And so, like, it was kind of on and off the whole time, but it was always something that gave me access to the social world and always something that gave me access to people and connection, right? And having the crack. And I love that, right? But that was, for me, it definitely felt like, and I look back on it now, alcohol just it definitely chips away at your self-confidence, I believe, without even realizing. And it's only now that I've really done the work and I'm a couple of years out of it and I can look back now that I recognize that it really drilled into me a sense of belief that without something in my glass, people wouldn't mind there. You know, just if that makes sense. You know what I mean? I'm kind of going, you're part of the crack. And if you're not drinking, you either have to be on antibiotics or you have to be pregnant. And if you're neither of those two things, boring. She gone boring. And this would be the conversation that would go on. So like, this is the way it was. So during the 90s, you know what
I mean? But Jen, just to stop you there for a sec, doesn't alcohol give you confidence? What about Dutch courage? Like, aren't we told all the time that actually, you know, if you're feeling a bit anxious, then that might take the edge off.
And see, it wasn't even a social anxiety that I had. I didn't have that, but it was definitely a case of if you're in the pub, you're meeting your friends, you're drinking. And if you're not drinking, why aren't you? It just was unfathomable. Like, it just was never something that wasn't done. Nobody went and didn't drink. It just wasn't a thing. And if you weren't sick and if you weren't pregnant, what's going on? You know, it just could not wrap the head around it. And I was
part of
that.
You've got to be ill. You're not telling us something. There's something going on here.
Yeah. Like, I was part of that because you grew up where it was just everywhere, like that music in the lift. It's just there all the time. Why would you turn it off? Don't understand. Computer says no. And that was just the world you grew up in. So it's like you had access to the crack. You had access and you're part of the fun group and everything was great fun, you know? So then through the 90s and then into the 90s and into the early noughties, I suppose, then I had actually got myself to a point where I could, I got myself a really good job around that stage and in my kind of mid-20s up at that point then. And up to, I suppose, between the ages of 15 and 25, I suppose, drink was very much, it was a friend to me. It was a comfort to me. I was very lost. I was very alone. I look back at that girl now and I think she was so scared of life, you know, and she didn't really have anybody to explain the big feelings of all those events that I just explained to you there that kind of happened and everything else in between, like crushing on friends' couches, trying to find places that I could stay and that kind of thing. It was a very scary time and I had no way of expressing my emotions. So after that event, when somebody was trying to assault me in the house and after losing somebody that was close to me and having to identify them, having been like for food at them the evening before and then the guards knocking on the door and then having to go and identify them on the slab, he was only 20. So like, and you know, I was only a young girl at that time. Like I was only 21 when that happened. So like, that was a huge thing. And then like, not having any words to express it or not even understanding how to think about this. And you're trying to, and you've got so much other stuff going on around you in your life. And I just felt that alcohol was my friend. It was a comfort blanket for me. And then by the time, I suppose, if I fast forward then, when I got to maybe my mid-20s, I managed to, I suppose, land a very good job. I managed to buy myself a really nice apartment with nice views of Dublin. That was great at 25. And then arguably that was before the arse fell out of market and we had the collapse in the market. So everything was inflated, you know, but I had a really nice car imported. And I was kind of into my Carrie Bradshaw era. Do you know what I mean? So I was kind of coming into Carrie Bradshaw. Now I had a safe place to be. I was self-sufficient. I had financed my third and fourth year. I went back to do my degree by night, which is arguably a harder way, although I still felt like a failure. I felt like I hadn't done it the right way. I kind of just scrambled my way through, and I always kind of knocked myself for all of that period of time because everyone else was doing it well. Whereas when I look back now, that girl was just trying to survive, you know, and it was just trying to get through. So from the 25 on then, I guess, into my kind of early 30s, that was my Carrie Bradshaw, as I said, out in the town, having the crack, Saturday nights, big benders, you know, going out to pals, maybe go for dinner on a Thursday night, maybe out on a Friday night, maybe out on a Saturday night, living the life. And for all intents and purposes, it was great fun. You know, I had no dependents. I didn't have anybody on me. I was really getting into my own. And it was at that time then that I met John, my now husband. And so that's when I feel like my life really sort of started, my adult life really started in a true sense of the word. You know, I found happiness. And
it's really romantic, by the way. That's really nice. My life, like literally my life, I feel like my life started when I met you. Like that should be on the front of a Valentine's Day. What, you know, Valentine's last week, you know, how yeah. apt to have that as the start of your adult life, Jen.
I'm not going to tell myself, I said that on this podcast, but yeah, I agree. I feel like he just brought so many things, you know, that I really, anyway, when I met him and everything, like we just, and like people say, just chip any like, we, interestingly, we don't have any anniversaries or anything like that because we never really kind of noted like our first date or anything like that. We just kind of rolled along. I suppose we just, yeah, we're just kind of easygoing in that sense. Do you know what I mean? We just get on so well. But yeah, it was definitely the start of what I now realize was really the rest of my life, you know? And so for those few years, Carrie Bradshaw era, having a great time, everything great. Then comes marriage and babies. Now I'm trying to still be Carrie Bradshaw, plus I've got two kids and I'm juggling a full-time job. And we've moved from Dublin out into the flatlands of Kildare, beautiful county. And I'm living
horse,
in a new...
Horse country, right?
It is horse country, yes. The home of the Irish National Stud. And we've got some wonderful race horses here.
Again, that was from our warm-up chat. That wasn't me.
I did not know that. You trying to kiss.
I thought I'd try and pass it off. And then I thought, I'm not going to get away with this.
You should have claimed it, Ben. You should just lean in.
I know.
But yeah, so then came like, you know, the whole thing of transitioning into early parenthood, and anybody who's got kids will know, like, you know, it's a very conflictual time, you know, because I found like that, you know, whilst I was so in love with my kids, I was very lucky that I had two healthy children, you know, I was happily married and everything, but I felt like I had no occasional freedom there. So I had no just casual freedom where I could just say after work, I'm going to head on and do whatever. That didn't happen anymore. And there was a big adjustment period over that phase, I feel. And then kind of, as we kind of were adjusting into all of that, then came kind of mommy wine culture. You know what I mean? So again, the background music, but again, my relationship with wine is shifting and changing all the time, you know, from being kind of a comfort blanket, arguably quite an unhealthy relationship with it, through to really enjoying its social access, you know, really good fun. I have the ticket in here now and I can be at the table with everyone. True to now, mommy wine culture. And I'm struggling with the conflict around having my kids, wasted days, feeling crap, wanting to socialize and meet my friends, wanting to feel like me again, you know, and so many different aspects of my life kind of starting to feel quite stuck. And it really is something that just began to grate on me kind of from the age of 36 onwards. I'm 46 now. So like, for that period of time, it just started to grate and grate and grate on me. And it felt like everything in my life was just starting to slowly grind to a halt. It's like everything inside of me was just becoming frictional, you know, and I was just slowing down and I was becoming more unhappy. And as I was drinking, I wasn't really kind of like happy with it. I wasn't kind of coming out. I was actually feeling like that the downs were far deeper, like the drops were far lower, you know. And I was starting to really struggle internally with like trying to moderate. I was like, I'm trying to moderate. I'm trying to, you know, do it all. You know, you're told you can do it all, you can be it all, you can work, you can commute, you can do all these things, you can still be yourself. Women, you know, you can have it all. We can all have it all.
Yeah, but yeah, you can do it all. But if you're struggling at any point, all you need to do is drink.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do as parents. Yeah. You know, if you're struggling, just have a drink. Equally, if you succeeded at life, have a drink.
Yeah.
Do it. And it grinds my gears now with my 2020 yeah. vision looking back, Jen, the whole mummy wine culture, daddy yeah. wine culture, parental everything. Wine culture,
yes.
that it will solve your problems. And actually, you know, what you're saying,
your
it resonates so much with me. I got to 44, you know, and I'd had these thoughts about, I need to cut down, the moderation thing, probably for the best part of a decade, you know, from my late 30s onwards. And then I found, you know, I turned around at the age of 44 and wine and alcohol had bitten me so massively on my ever-expanding arse, but I sort of hadn't seen it coming. It's writing it in that bloated belly and the seven chins and all the rest of it. And it's like, when did that happen? How has that happened? Yeah. Why has it happened? Because it's celebrated, it's encouraged. And if you're not doing it, you're the odd one out.
Well, yeah, you're the odd one out. But also, did she wake up on a park bench? Is that why she's stopping? You know, and in Ireland, as a country, and I don't know if the UK is the same, but certainly here, secrecy is a big thing. You don't want the neighbours to know your biz. You know, so people won't be open about these stories. And that's another reason why I really felt strongly that if I got to the point where I felt confident and strong enough in myself and in the whole alcohol-free life experience, I'm going to start shouting about it. Because that's the thing. You don't want people to know your business. People are like, oh, you know, and do you know yourself? You tell somebody, oh, sure, yeah, I don't drink. And I say it very confidently. Oh, no, I don't drink. And I wear it like a badge of honor. And you see them, people would straight away, but yes, I don't drink much either now. And they start telling you and explaining and you're kind of going like, yeah, it's a really unusual one. And the thing is, none of us are at fault for any of this. It's big alcohol and that's really what it comes down to. But it's so insidious. It's just so insidious, you know?
Jen, I'm not sure if you said before we started recording that you felt a bit nervous. I've got to be honest, I haven't seen any of that in our conversation so far. It feels like, you know, you feel good this whole podcast
thing,
Jen.
That's testament to you guys, though. That's testament to you.
Sorry, Shaz, you were going to actually ask a question.
Well, no, I wasn't, but it's just two words that Jen mentioned there, big alcohol, and I thought, oh, Ben's going to jump in at this point.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's something that I have discussed previously, a lot of it actually. I wanted to ask you this. I wasn't sure the best way of doing it. Right, you talked about how alcohol was a great friend, was the phrase that you used, and that, you know, it was a culture where, you know, smoking the maternity wards, drinking, no sleep, all that kind of stuff. Like, I wonder, because we've just been talking before we started this, we were recording our premium podcast, which you do every week. And we were talking about this zebra striping term. I'm not sure if you've heard about this, but young people are zebra striping, which basically means when they go on a night out, when I'd go on a night out, Jen, I'd have beer, beer, beer. That was on the train before I even got to the night out. Then you'd have beer, beer, shot, shot, beer, shot, 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 you know, drink, 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 all the way through.
Yeah.
What these zebra stripe kids are doing is they'll have an alcoholic drink and then a non-alcoholic and then an alcoholic and then a non-alcoholic, and they're kind of it's a way of trying to be more mindful about their consumption.
Wow.
Now, which, you know, obviously, we were saying this on the premium pod, as parents, like, I really hope that our kids never drink, because I understand the benefit of being an alcohol-free person, and I really hope that they don't. I actually think that the zebra striping thing is quite interesting, because Alfie, my stepson's 16 now, and he's showing no interest in alcohol at all, which is fabulous. He's nearly 17. I was very different when I was 16, nearly 17. But, you know, I think having a conversation, rather than going, if you go out with your mates, why don't you have an alcohol-free night? I can just imagine the zebra striping conversation landing a bit better. I think narratives are important, and I think environment is massively important. Huge. But if I'm being really honest with myself, because, you know, you're right to say that we grew up at a time when it was accessible. I mean, it still is accessible, available.
Yeah.
But at least now there are other narratives in there. You know, it's not just the one. But if I'm being really honest with myself, if I was 16, 17 growing up today in 2025, I still think that I would drink with the enthusiasm I did when I was doing that in the 2000s.
But why did you say that?
Do you know what I mean?
But why?
Just because I think a lot of it is environment. A lot of it is, you know, social.
But if your friends were zebra striping, would you?
Well, yeah, again, if I'm being completely honest, like, I threw myself into drinking for a lot of reasons that weren't societal. It was more about, it was more, like you say, it's those kind of, those inner things, those personal insecurities. Like, do you think, and can you believe it? I am actually getting to a question.
Oh, I wasn't sure, actually.
Yeah. but if, so let's take you, Jen, and let's plonk, you know, early 20s you in 2025 instead of the 90s.
Mm.
Or when were you, so you say you're...
probably,
you're one of those people that you,
yeah, in
you
the could, 90s, you could in be, the 90s, in the
you
90s.
Could be 40, you could be 20, Jen. I'm just gonna be dead honest, but
take it, Jen, take it. What a compliment.
He needs glasses quick.
but do you, what do you think, do you like, how much was environment, how much of it was internal you, if you plonked your, you know, younger you in today's world where people are more mindful, there are more narratives, do you think that you would have gone down the same path with drinking or not?
Oh, that is a really, really good question. And I think given
it's the longest question I've ever asked.
Yeah.
I think
we got there in the end.
I think it's very hard to answer that, right? Because we're only guessing. But like, and again, there are different vices today, aren't there? There's so many different vices that the kids maybe would maybe go for. I think I definitely needed a distraction. I needed maybe I would have just gone the same road. It's very hard to know. I definitely was lonely. I definitely was scared. I definitely needed a distraction. I definitely needed access to friends and I needed to be around them. And to do that, it was to be in the pub then because there wasn't anything else. Like literally, there's nothing else. Like I was at a tree. We've got a treehouse sauna near us here. Fabulous one down onto the river. They've only just opened it with like, you know, those lovely like cold baths and all this kind of, they do all these fabulous things anyway. It's just out the road from us here. And like, I was leaving on a Saturday night there. They had their opening there last weekend. And I went in with a couple of friends of mine. I went in, we did the sauna and blah, 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 blah. And we were leaving. And as I was leaving, there was probably about 30 lads and they're in their mid-20s on a Saturday night. And they're all going in to use the jacuzzis and the plunge pool. You know what I mean? Because it's there. And Ireland's culture today. So like the lads, they want to socialize, but there wasn't anything when I was younger, but there is a few, that's kind of thing is starting to happen in Ireland now. And like coffee culture, there was no such thing as a coffee culture before COVID. And I swear to God, you cannot hop a stick and you bang it off some sort of a horse box converted into a coffee shop. Do you know what I mean? They're everywhere. Like there's just coffee shops all over. And like it's coffee culture now. It's not unusual now to go out on a Friday and meet a friend for a coffee on a Friday evening. Like people will do that. And you go in and you meet young kids in their 20s and they've been sitting over the same cup of coffee maybe for the last couple of hours because they can't afford to buy anything else. But like there's somewhere to be. You know? Yeah, so our culture is changing.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like I'm just thinking, you know, in Liverpool now, you can go and spend all night playing darts in a place you want to, or you know, bowling's cool for a night out now.
And realistically,
you know, bowling was what you did as a kid and then you became a teenager and you went to the pub. But now, you know,
this is it. And like realistically, if you're in your teens and your 20s, you want to be with your friends. And if that means hanging around in a cold field because there's nowhere else to go, that's what you'll do.
Yeah, but you're right. When I was, the environment was, there wasn't that.
There wasn't that culture, wasn't
hot
there.
Hot sauna.
Yeah. Like the culture. And I was walking out the door going, wow, like these young lads all heading off in, you know, on a Saturday night. Now, they might have been going to the pub after, but they were doing the sauna as well. Do you know what I mean? So it was just great. Like, and like, this is the thing, like that when kind of getting into, I suppose, getting into the stage where it started to become kind of frictional for me was exactly like you were saying there, Shaz. It's like, do you know, come to like the Friday evening and I'd be like, sure, I've no plans now this weekend. And I've been working like remotely from home. And the next thing hits 5 o'clock and you're like, okay, so it's the weekend now. Well, that was exciting. You know what I mean? I mean, I've nothing to do, sure. And every weekend most weekends would involve a bottle of wine. John would bring her home or I'd bring it home or we'd sit in front of the fire and companionship and this and that. But as I said, over time, and then I might have big nights out and then I might have small nights out and then I might have nothing at all. But my relationship with alcohol was just really becoming a problem for me in that I would drink, my stomach would be distended, I'd be physically unwell after it. I'd feel, and even if I wouldn't drink a huge, that's not if I'd had a big night out, obviously I'd be sick, as we know. And if I wouldn't have a lot, maybe if I share a bottle with John, the cheese board, maybe 2 glasses of wine or whatever, I'd be meh. I'd be meh all the next day, and then I'd be meh into the following week. And like, I'm a really big advocate for my health. I've always been into health my whole life. And it's been a big pastime, and now I work in it, thanks to being alcohol free. But like, you know, then like, so being healthy and being fit. So I would be training, you know what I mean? But I was getting nowhere. It's like my wheels were spinning in the muck And I wasn't progressing. Nothing was moving forward. And in my career, I was working in a really, I was quite successful in my role in terms of financially, I was successful. And I did a job that I enjoyed because I was interacting with people and it leaned into my capabilities. So I was quite happy to do that, but it wasn't my passion. And I knew that I needed to be working in health, but I never had the, I don't know, did I ever, it was just that I had no time, no interest. I didn't have the bandwidth internally to give it the time that I needed to figure it out. And that clawed away at me, like, because I felt more and more like I was stuck. And every time that I'd have drinks and I would take away from being a good parent, because for me, turning up for my children in a healthy way is so, so important to me. Like, and that's a really big deal. So like, I really beat myself up when it was a case that I was not fit, but I wouldn't talk about it. I beat myself up internally because I can't talk about it because sure, am I the only person that's struggling? You know, so I can't go talking to my friends about it because they'd be like, oh, did you wake up on a park bench? Do you know, secrecy, don't tell your pals. Nobody wants their neighbors to know, twitching curtains, you know? So it kind of, this whole stuff was kind of, I kind of found that all areas of my life, from like my health, you know, my mental health, my personal development, my career, everything started grinding to a halt. And I'll often liken it to, you know, the workings on like those Swiss watches, you have those little kind of things on the inside. It's like they all stopped. And I kind of arrived at a point, I remember saying to John, I was so desperate. I was so miserable. I was so miserable with, and like drinking was just the whole time at the weekends and everything else. I just was miserable. It was making me so unhappy. And I just said it to John. I was like, you know, would you quit with me? Would you take a break with me? And he was like, you know, and he was being really supportive. And he's like, look, I think it'll be a good thing for you to do. He said, you know, you're not very happy or whatever. Like, but I don't really have, it's not a problem for me. And it isn't. It's not something that, like, John is just one of these people that's annoyingly consistent. Like, yeah. He's just, he doesn't go up and down. There's none of that. He's just really level, kind of real positive, optimistic. And alcohol didn't affect him the way it affected me. It just didn't. And he didn't have the same issues, but he also didn't have the same background. He didn't have the same problems that I was bringing to the table and things that I really needed to work through. So when he said no, like, you know, but I'll support you. Absolutely, you do it. I thought, that's it. You know, I'm stuck now. I couldn't possibly do this on my own because I had no confidence in myself to be able to move forward. I couldn't see a way forward. There's nobody around me doing it. I didn't know what it looked like. I was terrified of being lonely. I was so afraid of being rejected by my friends that they'd turn and go, thought you were great crack. You're not great crack at all. Don't want to know you, you know? And then I had visions of myself lying in front of the fire, like for the rest of my life, just like, you know, in a ball. I thought to myself, this is just going to be miserable existence. And so I really sat with that. I probably struggled for about maybe a month or 6 weeks, maybe even 2 months after that conversation with him. And it really was eating me up inside. And then one day, it just a thought kind of struck me. And it was just like, you know, maybe it's you. You know, maybe you need to be the change that other people see. And I just sat with that. And I remember getting really emotional after that, thinking, and that I thought, like, maybe it is me. Maybe other people need to see what it looks like. And maybe it's me. And I just thought, this is absolutely bonkers. But anyway, what I did was I signed up to a 12-week fitness thing as cover. So I could say this is what I was doing and no one really kind of questioned it. And I wasn't even sure I'd get to 12 weeks. I didn't know how I was going to navigate that. And that's where OTI came in. And when I landed upon you, absolutely unbelievable. And when I because I do wonder what my journey would have been like had I not found you, being honest. Because I did read and I did look at a lot, read loads of books, got into the Quitlet, did all of that. But I looked up so many different pods and I couldn't find one that I found relatable until I found you. And that really started me and gave me the motivation to keep moving. And thanks to all your wonderful community members, I picked up all these little things and lessons and tips and tricks that helped me to navigate all my firsts. And then I went from 12 weeks, I got up to six, I got up to 3 months. Yeah, I got managed to 3 months. Then I went to 6 months and I kind of said to my husband, he said, are you going to keep going? Or I said, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm not going back. I don't know where this is leading me, but I'm just going to keep going. And I just kept going, navigating the first, not just being really uncomfortable, leaning into the discomfort, just doing all these toe-curlingly awkward things sober, just doing them, just getting them behind me and just moving forward. And slowly the confidence started to come. And what happened is, for me, is that it's not that all these wonderful things started happening in my life. Like, I changed my career. I eventually landed on what I wanted to do. And now I'm a professionally qualified nutrition and health coach. And I'm studying nutrition science. And I'm leaning into what I absolutely love. And so I'm out there helping people to live better lives. That's what I was meant to do. And I know that's what I was meant to do. But I needed to get the headspace and the bandwidth to do the work. I then started into talk therapy. That helped me to develop myself as a person, understand me better. So that then helped me to do the work. I had the bandwidth. I became a better parent. I was able to do the work. I was able to do my training. I leveled up. All the money that I would spend on socializing, drinking at home, drinking in the pub, whatever, I invested in going to a bodybuilding gym and hiring a strength coach, something I'd always thought about doing, but I thought, I don't have the energy. Couldn't be bothered. I had the bandwidth and I did it. And I'm fitter and stronger now at 46 than I was when I was 26. You know, I'm happier, I'm more vibrant, I'm more energetic. Everything has just started to come. And once I got to the year, I just thought, I'm done. And I just started running then. I kind of feel emotional even talking about it. I just felt like I just kept going and going. And my husband would say to me, he said, it's not like you've gone back to your old self. He said, it's like a new elevated version of you has just come out of the ashes. And you're just, it's like I'm just living into myself, but I'm learning about who I am, you know, what my strengths are. And I'm taking all these things and I'm constantly learning, you know what I mean, about everything. And I'm just moving forward at that pace. And every single aspect of my life, bar none, setting healthy boundaries, understanding how to do that, protecting myself and my health, looking after my future health, looking after my children, understanding so much more about life. That is all completely stemmed from removing one thing that was not helping me, that was holding me back and was leaving me feel like crap. You know, so once I removed that, everything, all those cogs in my watch all started moving again. They all just started working. It's amazing. It's just, and I can't stop talking about it. And what I actually found that I do now is actually, because I would show on my socials, I would be very openly showing about my nights out. And I'm mentoring people, alcohol-free mentorship for people as part of my coaching. And what I do there is I just show. You know, if you walk the walk, you show them going out. Like I said, Armin van Helden there at the end of the summer last year, full day festival, day and night dancing, having that crack. And no one cared because I decided it wasn't a problem. I decided it wasn't a problem. Mm. You know what I mean? I belong here. I have a seat at this table and I'm still the girl who was great crack back then and I'm even better crack now and I don't need drink. You know what I mean? And I'm getting an awful lot of feedback from friends and from people that are seeing me on socials that are coming forward and saying, you know, this is kind of inspiring me. And I just kind of feel like going back to that girl who was standing bawling into the sink basically that day when I thought to myself, maybe it's me. Maybe I need to be a part of this, a tiny little part in what you guys do all the time. Add my voice to that movement because it's so important. It's so important that people have the facts. They're able to make an informed decision. You know, they have to have all the facts health-wise and know what they're doing. You know, and there's people out there who have got diseases and chronic diseases and they're not being informed. More needs to be done by government. More needs to be done by medical professionals. Like the information is out there. Why are we not telling people? And then, so for me then as well, it's about displaying, more importantly, and my number one thing is to be a really good role model to my children. And Ben, to your point around hoping your kids never drink, I really hope my kids don't drink, but I already know that my son, who's 9 and a half, can't wait to be able to go out. And he said it to me after watching Alvin and the Chipmunks and the Chipmunks disappeared off down to the casino. They were having great crack and everyone's partying and having fun. And Jack was like, I can't wait, man, till it's my turn, you know. And I'm sitting looking at him going, oh, because like that, I'm thinking, is he hearing the background music from the lift? Is he already hearing that?
At nine years old.
Like this is...
From Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Yeah, yeah. It's subliminal though. It's there. It's in the background. You don't even notice it because like, you know, when you're younger and you're growing up, it's not that you notice the drink. Mm. You just notice everyone having fun. It just happens to be there. So you just slowly associate one with the other. And so that's something for me, it's really important is to be able to, when we're down west and we're going into the pub to play a game of cards for an hour, that I'm sitting there and I have a cup of tea in front of me. So that they see other ways of doing things.
Jen, we're just about out of time. We've got a couple of minutes left. And for somebody that was nervous about speaking on a podcast, OMG.
I'm not sure I believe that, Jen.
We don't believe you.
My heart was banging out of my chest before you came on.
Don't you worry. It's gone incredibly fast. It really, really has. And we could listen to you forever. I suppose I just want to take you back. Final question in brief. That 360 moment you mentioned, you know, earlier on in our chat that you were scared of life as a young woman. And then fast forward to today. And, you know, you started off the episode talking about that 360 when you had OTI in your ears for the first time thinking, oh, what am I doing? What is all this nonsense? To today, being a guest on that very podcast that started all that madness. How would you summarize that?
How would I summarize the emotion of that, or from there to here? That's absolutely life-changing. Like, there is no, it's very hard to even put into words. I feel like I have unlocked my future potential. I unlocked the person I had hoped that I'd be. I navigated that whole thing. I did all the hard work, you know, by having that additional capacity. I'm so incredibly proud of myself. It was hard. It was really hard. But for anybody that's listening, I would just say, lean into the hard. And I would just remind anyone that's listening, when you're sitting there and you think, I can't do this, how could I do this? Maybe it's you. Maybe you already have everything that you need to get to where you want to go. You just have to start dismantling the ego, let go of these self-limiting beliefs, because you're holding yourself back. When you come and you make a decision, I am going to do this, I'm going to take one step after another, and I'm just going to keep moving forward. Before you know it, you start jogging, then you'll start running. But maybe it's you. Maybe you already have everything that you need.
Jen Mugen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us on Over the Influence.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to share my story. I hope it helps somebody.